Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 143 of the Salvaggio and Cry Sports Podcast. Here for you again on another Wednesday night, the night of Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Celtics and the Heat, 7:14 p.m. Judging by how much we have on tap tonight, I think we could get this done and in the books, ready, you know, for full distribution tomorrow before the start of Game 1. So, but doesn't mean we don't have a great show ahead for you. Lots to cover. But before we get to moments of the week ahead of game one, how are you feeling, Ryan?
I'm feeling great. I'm feeling much better than last week. Of course, we talked about it off the air. My reverse jinx of the Celtics, people that listened last week, I thought the season was over. I thought that this was going to be the year that Philly broke through. And the Celtics would, you know, kind of falter in the big moment. Thankfully I was proved wrong. Thankfully, Jason Tatum once again showed what I've been hoping for him to show. Of course, showed a little bit of that Atlanta series, that game six. Showed a lot of it in game seven, as we'll get to. But I'm feeling great. Happy again that the Celtics are in the Eastern Conference Finals, and hopefully they can pull out another win against the Miami Heat and advance to the NBA Finals at some point here in the next couple weeks.
Absolutely. Yeah, we weren't super optimistic last week. No sugarcoating that, but luckily for not looking stupid purposes, as I am tweeting the stream out right now, we didn't definitively give a winner or loser, as I remember. So credit to us. We didn't, you know, we didn't get in the sewer on that. Excuse me. But let's start our moments of the week before we get to all the meat and potatoes of the show. I have a double this week with the Arizona Coyotes looking like they're going to relocate. Not this year, but in the future. Their arena proposal was denied as they were trying to set up a huge project in Tempe. I don't know if you've seen the pictures of it, but I don't know how you can deny that. It looks pretty cool. But
I have not. I'll have to check that out at some point.
There are obviously there's much more that goes into it than just how pretty it looks. Mm-hmm. This is from Frank Saravalli's article earlier today. Jay Fresh Hockey tweeted this out. He said, however, NHL sources indicated that there's been a significant disparity in spending by political action committees tied to both sides. The belief is the Coyotes side has spent less than $250,000 to activate the vote, opting for a bootstrap campaign, while the opposition has spent upwards of $2 million backed by high power labor unions who have not received a guarantee that they will be the ones building the project. So Coyotes cheap out. There's a little bit of a disarray there. Not what you want to see if you're, you know, a Coyotes fan. Looks like they might be on the way out. But Bill Daly, deputy commissioner of the league, did say they're expected to play at Mullet Arena, Arizona State's arena this year, which was confirmed by ESPN's Greg Wyshynski and Sportsnet's Elliot Friedman. And right now, the early voting favorite ends up, sounds like, in, you know, Arizona Coyotes circles in the front office and stuff, all the decision makers appears to be Salt Lake City. But when all comes down to it, there are three propositions for the arena plan. There are 56, 56, and 57% respectively voting no. So that's not going to get it done. One popular theory thrown out right now is that Matt Ishbia, who's the owner of the Suns, could step in and move them downtown. The cost of renovating a building, though, that was just renovated, could be too expensive. Darren Dreger pointed that out. To me, Houston and Salt Lake City make the most sense. Mm-hmm. I think they'd want to keep him in a Western market, which would, you know, would be possible in Houston and Salt Lake City. And they're not super far away from Arizona in comparison to like Quebec City or Kansas City or Atlanta, which we've talked about we think is stupid.
Yeah.
Why would they go back to Atlanta? So
that one does not make sense to me in the slightest.
Yeah, I don't get it. Darren Dreger mentioned Atlanta. Friedman mentioned Sacramento and Kansas City. Sacramento would be another good one. Give them something there besides the Kings, who are on the mm-hmm. rise. You know, it could be exciting to add another franchise there. I don't see Kansas City. One proponent for Quebec City that I just saw before we went on from Chief from Barstool was moving the Red Wings back to the Western Conference where they used to be in the Central, and then, putting the Coyotes
flipping Arizona
in Quebec City in the East. But, you know, the one thing that I thing makes that tough is the fans. You know, you're moving from Arizona to Quebec City. That's quite
a trip. Yeah.
So I don't know how much that type of stuff with like fandom and proximity and relocating factors into these decisions, but I think it should.
You got to think it plays into it pretty heavily.
Factors into attendance, you know, buy-in, mm-hmm. all that stuff. Last time the Houston Rockets owners Tillman Fertitta and the NHL met, the number wasn't at the number the NHL liked. Jazz owner Ryan Smith has expressed interest in the NHL team in the past, which, you know, adds more credence to potentially moving to Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned, Andy Strickland says that the favorite appears to be Salt Lake City right now, which I realize we have in the outline twice. That's my B.
Just hammering that point home.
Yeah, just hammering it home. But that's about it with the relocation stuff. How do you feel about the whole thing? Do you have a different stance on things, or, you know, maybe another market nobody's thinking about?
Not really. I mean, I'm with you. To keep it out west would be like the most sense. It'd probably be the easiest transition. I've said it before. Atlanta, like, it already failed in that market once. Why would you go back there and try it again? Like, I get there's probably a new, obviously probably younger fan base you'd have the opportunity to get with, you know, people not maybe seeing the Thrashers back when they were in Atlanta. But that, like I said, that market failed once, and I can't imagine it's going to be sustainable again. So keep it out west somewhere. Salt Lake City makes a decent amount of sense. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's a good group of a few names, a few places to go.
Sacramento wouldn't be a bad one either.
Yeah,
forgot to mention that. Kansas City, I'm with you. That doesn't make a lot of, like, Kansas City is a football, baseball. Like, I don't really see a hockey team kind of picking up any sort of momentum out there.
They did have a team in the past, though. And they
did they?
An NHL team right now. I think like the 70s. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure they did have an NHL team. I think they were
okay. Did not know that.
Kansas City Mavericks, which I'm pretty sure is what their ECHL team is called right now. Feel free, anybody watching, to call me if I'm wrong there. But my other moment of the week was, why did Hampus Lindholm play through a broken foot? They concealed this injury. He was kind of brushing it off when he was asked about it. People thought there was something wrong with that foot. He broke his foot late in the regular season, carrying into the playoffs. Makes you wonder when they're keeping Matt Grzelcyk out of the lineup too. You know, that looks bad when you have, you know, a healthy defenseman versus Hampus Lindholm, who's clearly playing through a tough injury. It gets to a point where it's sometimes you have to just sit the guy, especially if it happens in the regular season. Give him the rest of the regular season to at least sit.
Exactly, yeah.
More of these decisions are coming back to bite them.
That's my one concern. I mean, we've seen it now over the last couple of weeks, and it's tapered down a bit, but – I was going to say Bruce Cassidy. Montgomery was getting crucified talking. I think we talked about it being like, oh, you know, I was talking about the whole Bergeron situation of, if Bergeron wanted to play, you know, it's Patrice Bergeron, I'm going to let him play. Like, I'm going to go to him and see what I hope Montgomery didn't fall into the same trap of being like, oh, it's Hampus Lindholm. Like, if he wants to go out there, I'll let him go out. Like, at some point, the coach has to step in and make a decision, I feel like. And I hope it wasn't the same case again, because I feel like if that ever comes out, that, like, he talked to Lindholm and Lindholm wanted to play, and Montgomery was like, all right, sure, you had a good season for us, I'll let you play. Like, then it's going to look even worse than maybe some people think it already does on Montgomery.
Yeah, I mean, it's not great. It just makes me angry.
The Grizzly thing you bring up, too, it makes it more aggravating. Again, it's like, okay, like, maybe, like, all the talk we had before, if you don't want to maybe play Grizzly against a bigger team, like, there is some merit behind that. But then again, now if you have a defenseman that is dealing with a broken foot, it's pretty pretty important thing to have in playing hockey. It's inexcusable if, you know, you don't sit him down at least one or two games when you have, like you said, a fully healthy and ready to go Matt Grizzly.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they announced no offseason surgery. So maybe at that point they were like, oh, he doesn't need surgery. You know, if he can play through it, we're going to have him play through it because he's an important player. It does ease my frustration in how bad he was in the playoffs, though. But still sucks. Still a shitty situation. Your moment of the week segues us into basketball talk, which will be the meat and potatoes of the show today.
Yeah, mine, it takes the cake, I think, for the highest ruling. I have it as tier, like, 500,000, I think I put it in. It's the whole Ja Morant situation for anyone that missed it over the weekend. I think it might have been actually on Mother's Day that the video itself came out. Might have been the Saturday before, so don't quote me on that. But Ja Morant was once again, in case you missed it, seen on an Instagram live video brandishing a gun. Since then, he has been suspended by the Memphis Grizzlies from every team activity moving forward. The NBA is once again looking into it and talking about potentially suspending him. I saw that Adam Silver was on the pre, you know, draft lottery show last night, and he said, you know, he was taken back by, you know, was shocked that this came up again. So you have that stupidity in itself. Ja Morant himself issued a statement, or his PR team, however you want to look at it, issued a statement, which that has now caught some scrutiny because people on Twitter seem to have uncovered that he may or may not have used ChatGPT. If you go onto that website or however you want to, you know, whatever you want to define that is, and type in like, write me an apology statement. The pictures on Twitter are like word for word the same exact thing that John Morant put out in a statement. So what's
this
up?
This is my thing. I think this is a little manufactured. I think someone mentioned this in the replies. You know how you can like inspect a page?
Yeah.
You can change the text on a page. I think somebody might have done that to make him look bad.
I was wondering that myself. And then I saw today that Shannon Sharp, and so maybe he got duped by it too, but they were talking about it, him and Skip Bayless. So that's why I feel like it kind of got a little bit of traction too. But if it is, I mean, you hope it's not. You hope it's false, because that would look even worse than John Morant already does, and it would make him look even more dumb than he appears to be for now having a second problem with a gun. But I don't know. I thought we'd just spend a second talking about this because I think, you know, the national, obviously, media has picked it up a little bit. Just give our thoughts. Me personally, like, I just don't get how, and I kind of share the same thought process as Stephen A. I thought he had a good discussion on it on First Take the other day. He said kind of basically that, like, this wasn't like a TMZ thing or just a media thing. Like, oh, we were out and we caught, you know, we're hiding in the bushes and caught John Morant with a gun. No, this was on the first one, of course, on his own personal Instagram Live. And now this one on a buddy of his Instagram Live the second time around. And like, just the guy just clearly does not care at all. Doesn't feel any sort of remorse after having to go through the 8-game suspension that he faced during the season. I don't know if I'm assuming he had to do some sort of like, not sensitivity training type, but like, you know what I mean? Had to like go somewhere and discuss this with someone. So the fact that it's come up again, and then again, like how much you want to read into the apology, if the ChatGPT thing is real or not. Like, the whole situation is terrible. This is something that, you know, one of the guys that is looked at as a face of the NBA, one of the budding young superstars in the league. Like, the fact that this has happened all over again just kind of shows that you can't fix stupid. Like, you hope the guy figures it out. But at this point, who's to say a couple weeks from now, a month from now, something like this doesn't happen again? Because the guy just clearly does not seem to either get it or care, or both.
Yeah, they got to give him the wood gun like the other guys, I think.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because, like, people, if this is getting screen recorded, I'm pretty sure, I don't know if you can rewind or watch them after. Maybe this guy watched it after. I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
It shows how stupid you are if people are going into your friend's Instagram Live and just screen recording, waiting for you to do something stupid.
Exactly. They're waiting for you to F up. In this case, now it's twice that this has happened. Like, it's not even like he's trying to hide it. I saw the video on break on Sunday at work, and like, clear as day, same thing, just like waving the gun around. Wasn't like, oh, crap, my bad. Like, did not care whatsoever. Just, I don't get it again. Like, you're a star in the NBA, man. You got all the money in the world, and you're going to throw it away. Potentially over. Now everyone's kind of course talking about like, what do you give him for a suspension? What does the NBA do now? Do you have any thoughts on that? Because like I said, it was an 8-game suspension the first time. I think he got fined too, but I can't remember what the amount was. So where are you sitting now, a second offender type of thing, if you had any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you gotta suspend him much more significantly. And Ja, piece of advice: you seem to like to flash guns and go to strip clubs. Maybe just keep it to strip clubs if you're looking for something to do in your downtime. Maybe just keep it to just that. No guns, you know? Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to stop you there. But
yeah, I thought about it the other day in kind of a poorly timed joke where people won't find it funny or anything. But I'm like, everyone all kind of made fun of John Morant for the I don't have any problems with anyone in the West comment that he's now obviously gotten flamed for because Memphis tapered out so quickly. But maybe this is why he didn't fear anybody in the West, because the guy's just walking around with guns and doesn't have a problem with, you know, assaulting anyone, or, you know, all the allegations that he's been dealing with over the last couple of months. So maybe there's a little bit of crazy in John Morant, and that's why he didn't really worry about anybody in the West, because he just doesn't care. And he's that kind of guy. But yeah, I don't know. It's a crazy situation. Like, you hope it gets cleared up and you hope somebody gets through to him. But now, again, a second time doing this. Like I said, I've seen a lot of people say he should get suspended the whole season. I saw Chris Russo the other day say 40 games, which JJ Redick had some strong comments for today. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't see half the season as a terrible suspension for him. Like, you have to lay down the hammer now. It's definitely going to be more than 8 games. I was thinking, like, maybe a third of the season. So you put that, for the math people, that's what, like 25-ish, somewhere between 25 and 30. Yeah, 27 games. So maybe you start there and build from that. I don't know, but something's definitely got to be done. You got to get through to him in some sort of way. I think the whole season is probably a little too much. half the season might be too much as well. Cause I mean, JJ Redick, like, I don't know if you heard or saw any of his comments. He made a good point that like, you can't really suspend a guy for something that isn't illegal. But then again, on the flip side of that, like the NBA has rules. You got to think this is in there. The contracts and everything that, you know, the players sign, that we don't want our superstar players or any player brandishing any sort of weapons.
Guns on,
yeah. Do not show off gun. If you own what, like, yeah. So again, I see people that are on that side of the argument. I get where they're coming from, but again, like, you have to know the platform you have. People look up to you, especially like young kids and stuff. You can't be doing this. So yeah. It's a bad look for you. It's a bad look for the league, for the Grizzlies, for everybody.
Yeah. It's dumb. Should stop, but don't know if it will. But that segues us into Celtics talk. We'll start with quick thoughts on game six, which, you know, my biggest thought on game six is it was gross. Mm-hmm. Thank God Tatum woke
scary
up
scary at times. Yep.
But that was just really one of the worst basketball games I've ever watched. It was just not fun. It was sloppy. Yep. But, you know, we'll get to game seven was a lot better. But just one of those gritty wins you got to get out of the way, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was the start of what you kind of saw in game seven. You saw the Celtics defense, especially in the fourth quarter, lock in late, you know, hold Philadelphia just 13 points. It was a little bit of the start of seeing Al Horford kind of shut down Joel Embiid for the most part. Again, that fourth quarter, Embiid and Maxey score all their points, 6 and 5. A good team effort. James Harden goes 0 for 2 from deep. Melton, who had some moments here and there, was 0 for 4. He missed 3 threes, and PJ Tucker missed the 3 as well. And like you said, a guy that I was calling for to be benched at one point in the game, Jason Tatum, overcomes one of the worst starts of his career, maybe in NBA history. Got to think it's up there. You know, 1 for 13, 3 points going into the fourth quarter, was 0 for 6 from deep. It was good. I think that was kind of the thing that I was leaning on, is he at least was active in other parts of the game. You know, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, a steal, and 2 blocks through the first 3 quarters. So he was doing it on the defensive end, at least, and, you know, keeping guys involved. So that was good to see. And then that fourth quarter was the start of what we saw going into game seven. The 16 points really took the thing over. And, you know, it became a superstar versus a superstar, Tatum versus Embiid, for a little bit of that fourth quarter. And then when Tatum blew the doors open, that was really the end of it. So that was good to see. Obviously, the Celtics, kind of like we've seen before, when their backs are against the wall facing the highest level of adversity, they seem to always come through in the most part. So that was good to see.
Yeah. It's just, again, one of those you have to get through when you play crappy. You got to be, you know, fortunate to take the win.
Mm-hmm.
They don't ask how, they ask how many. And
exactly,
they hit the number they needed to close it out at home. 112-88 win to win in seven. Jason Tatum makes history. I missed the first quarter. I was going to visit my grandmother, so I missed the first quarter on the way back. Caught like just the start of the second quarter and beyond. Mm-hmm. Jason Tatum sets a record, 51 points, 0 turnovers, like the complete polar opposite of game six.
That's for sure. Yep.
Besides the end. We had a little bit of a scuffle, if you will, with Georgia Niang, Methuen Mass native, and Jaylen Brown. We had a lot. We had a lot of fireworks. We had a 28-3 run, reminiscent of said Atlanta Falcons.
Mm-hmm.
Patriots Super Bowl.
It's always going to find a way into things. Yep.
There's a lot to like besides Malcolm Brogdon having 0 points going to the third quarter, me having him at 12 and a half over, and him finishing with 12.
I texted you when it happened. I'm like, I've lived those bad beats plenty of times. That's why I have stopped betting on NBA games for quite some time, because I was not good with the parlays. So I stopped hurting myself that way. But yeah, like you said, a ton of stuff. Of course, you start with Tatum. And that was, you mentioned, that was the big thing for me. You can talk all you want about the 51 points. And I'll get into, like I said, Tatum just really taking over the game and kind of showing a little bit of fire that I feel like we haven't seen a lot. Like we've seen it in bits and pieces in these playoffs so far. But I thought it really came out from, you know, I'm sure everyone's seen the videos of him just kind of, this is my shit at center court, you know, yelling at fans, pumping them up, stuff like that. Love seeing that. Like, I'd love to see more of that out of Tatum. That, like I said before, what I'm coining the F you, I'm better than you mentality that he needs to show more of and has so far, which was great. But the big thing for me was zero turnovers. I mean, we've talked about it before with Tatum. We saw it in the finals last year, really the playoffs throughout. You know, the game at times looked like was speed up on him. You know, he makes some dumb decisions. He made them in that Atlanta series a couple of times with some bad passes here and there. The fact that he had zero in this game and just dominated throughout, didn't make any mistakes, looked like he was in control from the start. I said it when His first basket, he crossed up Embiid and got an easy layup. I'm like, there you go. That's how you start this game off. Get an easy one for him and see if the floodgates open. And man, did they open. I mean, some of the shots he was hitting was as pure as you see. The threes he was hitting over Embiid were great. So an all-around phenomenal performance from Tatum.
Yep, and Embiid and Harden make business decisions to dog it. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the Philadelphia team. I mentioned that a little bit on last week's show. Again, wasn't the highest on the Celtics, but like I said, there was that factor of it is Doc Rivers, you know, who is now what, 17-33 in closeout slash elimination games.
The most game seven losses in NBA history.
Yep. He's got 10 game seven losses, has the most blown series leads out of any coach in NBA history, is now looking for a job. Once again, because the Philadelphia 76ers fired him. I wanted to get your thoughts on that, because I've seen some people argue back and forth. You think that was the right move for Philadelphia?
Yes, dude. Okay. Yes. Doc Rivers should retire.
There's talk of he might. That's one of the possibilities I've seen thrown out there. Look, I mean, obviously we like Doc Rivers for what he did here for the Celtics, helping them win a championship.
It pains me to see him like this.
It does, yes. Absolutely. It pains me to say. I was going to say, I think he's probably going to go down as one of the most overrated coaches in the NBA because of all the stuff that has happened. But look, for me, like, I know you choke away a 3-2 lead again. Like you said, he this is what he does. I put this more on Embiid. You said it yourself. They dogged it. Him and Harden at the end of the game, really the entire second half. James Harden, once again, one of the perennial losers in NBA history. Doesn't show up again, has just 9 points in the game, 3 in the entire second half, took just 3 shots, 5 turnovers for the game as well, was a minus 30, depending on how you read into, you know, plus minus in the NBA. We've talked about how much you read into the NHL. But he's just a dog the whole game. You know, you have the moment with Jaylen Brown where he loses the ball out of bounds and deliberately flails his arms to hit Brown in the face. I said it when it happened. I'm like, it's kind of funny that a literal punch to the face, a punch to the mouth woke the Celtics up. But that was really the big thing that Harden did in that game, the turning point. You have Embiid get shut down by Al Horford. Embiid has, I think, 15 points total in the game, just 2 in the second half. The couple of interesting stats from the game from NBA Central on Twitter said, this was the Tatum stat, Joel Embiid guarding Jason Tatum yesterday, 24 points allowed, 8 of 10 on field goals, 4-4 from deep and 4-4 from the free throw line. And then this was from ESPN stats and info on Twitter, said Joel Embiid averaged 33.1 points per game in the regular season and 23.7 points per game in the playoffs. That drop off of minus 9.4 is the largest by the year's MVP in NBA history. He quit at the end of that game. You could see it clear as day. Typical Joel Embiid after the game too, talking about, and you and I kind of talked back and forth about this, I think over text, you know, him saying that, James and I need help. You know, it's a 5-on-5 game. Dude, when you and Harden don't combine for what Jaylen Brown made in points, let alone what Jason Tatum made in points, like, I'm not going to put it on the other players. The two superstars need to step up. Boston's did. You guys didn't. Like, you're an MVP of the league. You need to perform better. Like, again, love Al Horford here, but he's not a guy. We've seen it over the years. He's not a guy that should be locking down as great as a player as Joel Embiid is. Like, yeah. I don't know how Horford does it year after year. Again, kudos to him, but like Embiid at some point, you got to think, needs to have that Tatum mentality and be like, I'm the best player on this floor. Like,
they don't have it.
Clearly they don't. It's in their DNA. Mm-hmm.
Mystery Sauce in the Twitch chat asked, any predictions for the final? What a game it was, though. I'm sticking with mine from the start. Celtics over Nuggets in 7.
For the NBA Finals as a whole?
Yes. Yes.
I don't know. I was going to – we'll get into it a little bit down the line because obviously Denver looked really good last night. With their game one win over the Lakers. I'll spoil mine. I have the Lakers win that series. I can't count out LeBron James. Done it too many times. I have Celtics probably against the Celtics against the Lakers. I'll say early on Celtics. Celtics probably in 7. That'll go the distance because it's the Lakers, LeBron James. But I don't know as of right now. Like that series could go either way. Whoever plays defense first in the Denver series is going to win it. Like there was no defense played at all in that game. The score was evident. Who knows though?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm hesitant to pick against LeBron too, but the Nuggets put out against a statement game last night against the Lakers. So we'll see
if they did
pick it up and continue.
The other real quick thing I wanted to mention about the closeout game against Philly, because you mentioned him very briefly again, just to go into that loser mentality and just absolute dork mentality that the 76ers have. The Georges Niang guy that just all throughout the series, just kind of anytime he hit a three, like it bugged me anytime he hit a three-pointer, would celebrate. Too. Yeah, like it was game seven of the finals that he just won. Like, look at me, like I'm that guy. It's like, yeah, buddy, you... Steph. Yeah, exactly. I looked up his stats for the series. He averaged, I think, like just over 3.5 shots a game and just over or just under three threes attempted. So like you're making one shot a game. You're playing just over 13 minutes. He played, I think, 3 minutes in game seven. And his most notable moment was grabbing Jaylen Brown's knee and then hiding behind his teammates when Brown went to the bench to confront him. So
his most moment after the game was making it onto Jaylen Brown's Instagram.
Yeah, I had to look that up too. I had a buddy of mine tell me that. It's like, oh, he round circled the thing. So it was kind of funny. But yeah, I mean, just
maybe he got his followers up for that.
Maybe, yeah. Now people definitely know his name now. I mean, before the series, I was like, a couple threes he hit early on. I'm like, who the hell is this guy that's just chucking these things up and they're going in? And then again, every three was like, I'm him. It's like, no, you're not.
Yeah, he's one of those. He was hitting threes and like, I don't know which game it was in particular. It was just like bugging me. Like, why are you hitting threes? You're not good. Stop.
Yeah, exactly. You barely play. You're nobody. Like, get out of here.
Yeah, exactly. The Celtics and Heat. This is a pretty familiar matchup these days in the playoffs. And it's always an exciting one. So Celtics Heat, round three, Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, you say exciting. I say nerve-wracking because, like I said from the start, my dad thought I was crazy for it, that I would have much rather seen the Bucks than the Heat. Just because we've seen this story before, the Heat tend to play the Celtics really, really well in the playoffs. You know, three out of the last 4 years, it's this matchup. They split this season 2-2 with the Celtics winning 111-104 back on October 21st. That was a game with no Rob Williams, Tatum and Brown. Tatum 29, Brown 28. November 30th, the Celtics won that matchup 134-121. No Jimmy Butler in that game, no Rob Williams for the Celtics. Tatum scored, I believe, a season high 49. December 2nd, the Heat won 120-116 in overtime. I know Rob Williams again for the Celtics. The Heat had 4 20-plus point scorers. Brown finished with 37, and Tatum had a brutal game of just 14. And then January 24th, this was the nobody played game. The Heat won 98-95. No Jimmy Butler, no Jaylen Brown, no Marcus Smart, no Al Horford, and no Malcolm Brogdon. I think it was just Tatum and basically the bench in that game for the Celtics. So really not a surprise that they lost in that game. Maybe the surprise, they only lost by three, but that shows it's as even gets. Like, these are two teams that know each other very well, know the play styles. What are you expecting in this series? What are your thoughts on, you know, either team, where maybe are some of the advantages that you see?
Yeah, I think they're beatable in different ways than the Heat, you know, on a surface level. Most games, you know, talking like even 80% of their abilities, I'd rather face Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo versus Harden and Embiid. Mm-hmm. But I do think the Sixers are probably a little deeper. But the Heat are just scrappy. They're scrappy and they're annoying in a way that I don't think the Sixers are. But the Celtics are deeper. The Celtics, you know, you can make the case might be the deepest team left in the playoffs.
I think you could definitely say that. Yep.
We've seen contributions from Brogdon at times. We've seen, you know, maybe not as much Derek White as we like in the playoffs at the top of his game, but you know, we saw what he can do in the regular season. And at times, you know, he said flashes in the playoffs, but not super consistent. I think depth is the Celtics' advantage, and obviously being the home team doesn't hurt either.
Absolutely.
Home court.
Yep. That's the biggest thing. Yeah. Get the crowd behind it. I was going to say Atlanta, cause Miami is perfect at home. 5-0. We've seen it before with the Celtics playing them. It's a tough place to play going down to South Beach. I'm the same as you. I 100% agree with you that the Celtics are definitely the deepest team left in the playoffs. I think you could argue they were the deepest team going in to begin with. But White's an interesting one. You know, Derek White, as you said, did not have a great Philadelphia series. I think the matchup was tough for him because Philly was a pretty physical team compared to Atlanta. I think this is a series he might be able to help you a little bit more in, as the Celtics are going with the double big lineup tonight. Again, Rob Williams and Al Horford, something we didn't mention. Talking about the Philly game, that was the switch made in game six, which ended up working out really well for the Celtics. They'll stick with that to start. I wonder how much you'll see of Rob Williams, because like I said, I think Derek White's speed can definitely help you with this, this Miami team that struggles to defend at times. But some of the big things for me, keys to the series, of course, you have to try to limit Jimmy Butler as best you can, make other people around him beat you. And that, of course, that question is, who's going to be that guy? Tyler Hero is still out with the broken hand. Victor Oladipo is out with a torn patella tendon. I think he's done for the series. Miami's gotten plenty of help, though. Duncan Robinson's turned back into the guy that he was a couple years ago. He's a sharpshooter, you know, can hit the three pretty well. Kyle Lowry always tends to play the Celtics really well in the playoffs. Don't know why, because I think, you know, he's a little past his prime. Kevin Love's been good for them. Then, of course, Max Strus, who we saw have his moments last year. Caleb Martin's been good, and Gabe Vincent. Any of those guys, like, none of these guys, like, scare you is the wrong word, but is there any guy that kind of stands out to you that you think might have, you know, a little bit more success now maybe than they might have had before? Because, like again, Strus is a guy that I feel like could go off, you know, if he starts getting hot from deep, but there's no one on this list that really screams to me, like, you have to really watch out for this guy.
Yeah, I mean, Duncan Robinson isn't a sure thing to me. Kevin Love, a guy that's been in the league forever, mm-hmm. has shown, you know, when he's on, he can be a good shooter, but that I don't think is like a surefire thing anymore. Nope. My biggest thing, just from recency bias, is Gabe Vincent from last year. I was talking to my buddy at work. I was like, who was the guy on the Heat last year that just like was randomly a pain in the ass of the Celtics? And he said mm-hmm. Gabe Vincent. So for that yep. reason alone, I'm going to have a keen eye on Gabe Vincent. If he's up to some shenanigans.
Okay.
But yeah, that's where I'm at. Like I said, like they just don't have the depth the Celtics have.
No. He was a guy too, if I remember correctly, was a pest defense. So I think he was one of those guys that was giving Tatum fits. Like that's the big thing about not having Oladipo, if I remember that series last year correctly. Like he at times, it was either last year or the bubble year, whichever one he was healthier for. Like he at times like was locking guys down, which was surprising because you don't really think of Victor Oladipo as a defensive stud. So him not being there is obviously a big loss for Miami, but that's the big thing too. Again, like no Hero, the Celtics, like having Hero again would help Miami's depth, but like, I can't stress enough. I'm with you. Like, I think the Celtics have them beat, there. Speaking of the Celtics, my other big key to the series is which Celtics team are you going to get? Of course, like we saw when these two teams met up last year, Celtics struggled at times with Miami. You know, Miami seems to have their number, at numerous occasions. So will you get that Celtics team that struggled at times last year, or will you get the team we saw game 6 against Atlanta, game 7 against Philly, this team that is locked in, ready to go? I hope it's that one. But like I said, Philadelphia, Miami seems to, you know, really get the Celtics number at times and really, you know, pester them defensively. I think it starts with Eric Spoelstra. So that's kind of the other key for me, is how much will be the, you know, the coaching disparity will come into play. Obviously the veteran Eric Spoelstra going up against the rookie Joe Mazzulla. Any thoughts on that? Disparity or your thoughts on other coach going into the series?
Another thing I learned today is Eric Spoelstra's never won coach of the year, which is kind of nuts.
That is shocking. I did not know that. I would have figured he would have had one with you know, LeBron, Bosch, Wade, yeah. Big Three era.
But yeah, he's a savvy guy. So that's the big thing for me outside of, you know, off court. I guess, you know, is Eric Spoelstra. Like, he's kind of like a surgeon on the sidelines, I feel like. So, yeah, it's just we saw one rookie. Well, rookie is a different, you know, not the right word here, but with the Bruins, we saw Jim Montgomery get out coached. Joe Mazzulla needs to make it so he doesn't get out coached here, because Spoelstra has an abundance of experience over him. So.
Absolutely. And I think you did see, obviously, after he caught a lot of flack for it in game 4, game 5, you know, I do think you saw Mazzulla a little bit take some steps in game 6 and especially game 7. There were some good timeouts in game 7, you know, when Philadelphia, at least at the start of the game, was going on a little bit of a run when the Celtics kind of cooled off in the second half of that game. So I think you saw Mazzulla kind of figure it out a tiny bit, obviously, with the lineup change. I think, you know, he made a good move there. But again, to me, like, I don't think it's going to be coaching that loses this series as big as, again, the disparity is. Spoelstra's a great coach. Like you said, again, that he hasn't won coach of the year is kind of surprising. It's going to come down to the play of the Celtics, particularly Brown and Tatum. Like, if you see the killer instinct that they had in game 7, hopefully throughout the series, like, you hope they can continue that and play like they should be playing. If they fall into the same, you know, Hero ball as we've seen before type of play to Miami's game, walk the ball up the court, play slow, turn the ball over, lose the physicality battle. Like that's what's going to lose the Celtics this series. Mazzulla at times will probably look a little outcoached by Spoelstra, because that's just the nature of the game. My big thing, I talked about it before. I'm pretty sure I talked about it last year in this series. Like, don't get tripped up by the zone. The fact that, you know, we've seen at times the Celtics really struggle with the zone, which is a pretty basic concept for basketball. Like, figure that out. Don't, you know, have that beat you up. And I saw an interesting stat from Felbert Mads today. They were talking about it. And, you know, the Celtics may be faltering late at times, you know, particularly against Miami, something that could come into play, their crunch time stats. The Celtics this season, games decided by 3 or less points. The Celtics are 5-8 in the regular season, 0-2 in the postseason, a combined 5-10. Miami, they're very good in crunch game, crunch situations. They are 14-8 in the regular season, 1-0 in the postseason, a combined 15-8. So you'd like to say Celtics get out to these big leads and keep them. But if that trend could change, the Celtics struggling down the stretch, maybe figure something out in this series, that would be great too.
Yeah, would be lovely, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep. We kind of gave them away, but predictions, unless you had any other thoughts or anything that might stand out to you in this series. No, you kind of talked a little bit about it, like defensively, stuff like that, or any players to key on.
Predictions was what I was going to get to, actually.
Okay.
I'm on Celtics in six. We have the breakdowns as we've done in the past. I think they win tonight. I think they lose game two, win 3, 5, and 6, lose game two, game four.
Okay. As I texted you, I struggled with this quite a bit. This took me at least 15 to 20 minutes to figure out. Like, I legitimately went back and forth on this, and I ended up texting you that I think, you know, game one tonight will really set the tone for how things go. I think if the Celtics win tonight, this thing could really, like, again, it all comes down to if they play up to their caliber. Because again, we talked about it enough that they are the deeper team. If they play up to their caliber, they win tonight, they continue that momentum from game seven against Philadelphia, I think this series could very well be over in five. Because again, just because of how talented the Celtics are compared to Miami, and the injuries for Miami, you know, is going to hurt them in the end. If they lose tonight, it's probably going to go seven games. I think it'll be back and forth. I ultimately, like you, settled on six with them winning games 1 and 2 at home. Miami steals one, you know, their first home game back for game three. Celtics take it back in game four. We have another one of those situations. Celtics up 3-1 at home at the Garden. This is where you have your hair pull out moment with this team. They lose game five, but respond well and take a game six win. And once again, win in Miami to go to the NBA Finals.
Love it. Just got to win.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you gotta do. Lakers and Nuggets. I have Nuggets in seven. I did have it in six 5 minutes ago, but I changed my mind.
Okay. I went the opposite. Like I said earlier, I had Lakers in seven. Again, joking about it, I think it comes down to whoever plays defense in this series. I think the Lakers, again, if you have LeBron lock in, you have Anthony Davis lock in, two very good defenders when they want to be. I think that's what ends up taking. And again, like I said, I can't count out LeBron James anymore. I think at this point in his career, he can sniff the NBA Finals. Now coming off a game one loss, the guy's going to want it more, even more than he probably already does. I think the Lakers bounce back. I think they showed, you know, some fight at the end of that game, specifically in the fourth quarter with the comeback. I think, you know, they showed a little bit of, I don't want to say a little bit of defense. That doesn't make a lot of sense. But they were able to limit Jokic late. Jokic had a great game. Don't get me wrong. Played like, you know, the MVP he maybe should have been this season, depending on who you ask. But the Lakers, at the end of that game, they switched Rui Hachimura onto him, and he locked them up pretty good. Jokic had just 3 points. They were all on free throws, particularly late as well, too. So he really didn't do anything in the fourth quarter. Maybe that's something the Lakers stick with. Maybe that ends up working. It'd be interesting to see, because I don't know how well Hachimura in a seven-game series is going to be able to contain Jokic. But again, like I think towards the end of the series, if it goes deep, experience of the Lakers also might end up coming, have them coming on top as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I'm really back and forth on that, but I'm on that series, but I think I'm going to stick with the Nuggets.
All right. It's good to be different. We don't want to have the same, like, oh, like Lakers-Celtics, like, boring. I mean, Lakers-Celtics, too, just for the obviously history of it, storylines of it, would be a great NBA Finals. And again, it would probably scare you a little bit because it is LeBron in the Finals, and that guy likes to turn it on like a switch, so.
Yep. Sure does. But yeah, game one tonight, that's going to wrap it up for basketball, though, and we'll do some quick hockey before we get to our Patriots schedule predictions.
Sure.
The East got wrapped up pretty quickly. We had 5-game series victories for Florida and Carolina. I got to be honest, I'm not super excited about that series. I want both teams to lose.
As do I.
On the other side, though, Stars and Kraken, we had a very tense Game 7 between the Stars and Kraken. Stars came out on top 2-1. Got to be some Stars fans thanking Jamie Oleksiak for that turnover on the Roope Hintz goal, former Stars defenseman. Tough scene. And Wyatt Johnson scores what ends up being the game winner on that sick backhand.
That was
awesome on the shoulder goal. And went up. Of course, Bruins will find a way to make that about the Bruins, saying they should have taken him over Fabian Lysell when they're both 20 years old. Mm-hmm. A little premature, but Wyatt Johnson has been very good this year, and that is not a secret. The Vegas Golden Knights and the Edmonton Oilers, though, the Oilers went out sad. Connor McDavid will have to wait another year for his first cup. They lose 5-2 in the deciding game 6 of the Vegas Golden Knights. Bruce Cassidy is off to the Western Conference Finals to take on the Dallas Stars. We'll get more into that after we, you know, as we do our predictions here. And we're on opposite sides on both.
Yeah, like I said, good to be different. For good sure. Good to be
different.
Yep.
Panthers and Hurricanes. I think the Hurricanes are the more well-rounded team. They've been getting great goaltending from Freddie Anderson. And I think depth is going to prove to be the factor here. It's got to end at some point for the Panthers, and mm-hmm. I have a feeling I'm going to be wrong because, the Panthers are just scrappy as hell, and Matthew Tkachuk is playing like a man on a mission. But I'm going Hurricanes here. I don't know if Bukowski is going to be able to hold up the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
As you have noted here in the outline, I didn't know the Panthers are clicking at a 27.6% success rate on the power play. That's pretty nuts. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, you have the Hurricanes at 90% on the penalty kill. So we'll see, it'd be interesting to see how those duel. I think the goaltending advantage is in Hurricanes' favor. I think the defense is too, even though, you know, the defense has really stepped up for the Panthers. And even without Teravainen, Svechnikov and Pacioretty, I still like Carolina's forward depth, maybe not as deep at this point with all those injuries than the Panthers, but I think there's a lot to like with the Hurricanes. I'm going with them here. Mm-hmm. I'm going Hurricanes in 6, ending the Panthers' Cinderella run.
I agree with you and everything you said about the Hurricanes, and I agree with the last thing. And the last thing you said is why I'm picking the Panthers, is they just have that Team of Destiny feel right now. I mean, definitely shocking in the first round. I don't know. You know, depending on how you look at the Maple Leafs in the second round, but two pretty big upsets for the Panthers so far. You got to think they're feeling it, they're feeling themselves, and a chance to knock out another pretty high seed in Carolina. The more I see of Florida, the more, like, I know we talked about it, you know, obviously you're upset that they beat the Bruins, but when you, I was texting you, you know, saying, oh, they're a dirty team. Like, yeah, I don't like how they play. The more I watch them play, it's like, They play a pretty good style of playoff hockey. Like, they're tough. They can score. They got, you know, pretty good defense. Guys, like, as you said, have been stepping up left and right. Bobrovsky's playing out of his mind, which is crazy to think about. NHL playoffs, you get a hot goalie at the right time, going a little bit of a run. You know, Bobrovsky's probably feeling that right now. But as you said, Anderson's been great too for Carolina. But I can't get by the fact that something in my gut is telling me that the Panthers, their Cinderella run, as you said, is not quite over yet. But I'm with you. Like, if they could shut the lights off in both buildings and not play this series, I would be very happy with that, because I don't want to see either one of these teams make the cup final.
Yeah, me too. And I'm honestly worried that for the reasons you stated, that you are going to be correct and I'm going to be wrong, but mm-hmm. I hope that's not the case. Honestly, when it comes down to it, though, I would rather see the Panthers go to the finals.
Would you? Okay.
I hate the Hurricanes. I hate their fans. They're psychotic and they go overboard, you know, overreacting to shit when it's just a game. Mm-hmm. Stars and Golden Knights, though. I'm going Stars in 7. I went back and forth on this. I think I could very well be wrong. Mm-hmm.
If I get two hockey picks right over you, I'm going to be like ecstatic. You feel like just.
That's going to be wild if that's the case. It would be.
Yep. First time ever.
But I don't know. We saw what Jake Ottinger can do in the playoffs last year. It's going to be tough to do it against Vegas, but I think he's due to return to that, like, psychotically good form.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to need to, because, you know, he's 8-5, 2.75 goals against, 903 in the playoffs. Solid, but not great. I think a huge thing for Dallas is going to be their power play. They're looking at over 30% at 31.7 and have had better success on the penalty kill. Honestly, the coaching matchup is a pretty good one too. I'm interested to see how they duel against each other. But I'm riding the Stars bandwagon. Roope Hintz has been dominant. I finally put money on him to win the Conn Smythe today. Hope I don't jinx him. He leads the NHL in points right now for remaining players. I'm giving the Ducks, Stars the slight edge here. I think they're going to knock off Vegas. This is going to be an awesome series. I'm looking forward to it way more than the Florida Carolina series.
Yeah,
But this series, no matter the winner, I think goes seven. It's going to be a great one. And yeah, that's really about it. But Jack Eichel, he's got a lot to prove. His first year in the playoffs, he's gotten this far already.
Been playing good.
Been playing really good. So this is just going to be a freaking phenomenal series. I'm really excited about it.
Mm-hmm. I went, like you said, the opposite of you. I have the Golden Knights in six, mainly out of spite. I am full on. I want to see Bruce Cassidy go all the way. I think it'd be hilarious. I'm sure you don't, but I think it'd be hilarious. So I'm going
with
that.
I don't want to hear about it on Twitter. That's my thing.
That is going to be a problem. But again, I just like the satanic side of me is like, that'd be pretty funny if, you know, the first year he'd go.
That's an adjective.
Yeah, a little too strong there. I couldn't think of the other. There's another way to phrase that, but sadistic. I couldn't think of what. Sadistic. Thank you. Yep, that's the one. I just lost my train of thought. Yeah. Vegas is, like I said, I think it'd be funny, really funny, to see Bruce Cassidy and his first year with the Golden Knights go all the way. The one thing that does worry me about that, you mentioned it, Ottinger has not been his usual self, as we saw last year, but I think you did see a little bit of him kind of find his footing in Game 7 against the Kraken. Was pretty good in that game. Seattle's goal came with, like, what, 17 seconds left or something like that? So he looked great. I mean, the Stars are a well-rounded team. Personally, like, not joking about it, I could care less who wins this series because I want either one of these teams to win the cup to regardless. So if I'm wrong with this one, I'll be fine with it just as long as whoever wins it is the eventual Stanley Cup winner.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Very excited for the Western Conference Finals, not so much for the East.
Yeah, I think this will be the better of the two series, you know, an offensive standpoint, a defense, you know, more obviously star players, like you said, with Eichel, Ottinger, a huge up-and-coming, you know, goalie. You know, there's some big names in the Florida Carolina one, but I think the Western Conference is, like you said, definitely going to be the better of the two.
And it would be good for Florida to lose because Radko Gudas screamed in the face of former BC goalie Joseph Woll at the end of the series. Didn't like that mean guy move. And I love Joe Pavelski, so I would like to see the Stars win. He's been in the league for a long time. He's still very, very good. Had that 4-goal game at the start of the series. I think it'd be really cool to see Joe Pavelski win, and it would be funny to see Sagan win a cup after all these years. It's just a really likable, really likable Stars team, and I think Miro Heiskanen is a horse, and he's putting himself in the category of maybe a top five defenseman in the league, if not like top seven. He's firmly in that category, playing 30 minutes a night plus, playing through injury. He's got that, you know, that big scar on his face. Forget if it was from a puck. Yeah, the deflected puck. He's a beast. The Stars are the most likable team left, and I would like them to win. I think they'll win in the Western Conference Finals, but that series is honestly a toss-up in a lot of ways. So we'll see what happens. Should be exciting. Just going to savor the last of hockey as we, you know, dwindle down the season here. But you might not have expected this. We're going to talk a little bit of football today.
Yeah, as one season is coming to a close, another one is starting up pretty soon.
Yeah. Early schedule predictions. To me, I think the ceiling for wins on this team is 12. The ceiling.
I was going to say, I'd like to know.
Ceiling to anybody who thinks, I think I'm going to predict them to go 12-5. I'm saying the ceiling.
I'm trying to think of where you have those other two wins coming out of this. I don't know. Like, I think I'm pretty good with my picks. I think it's a 9-10 win team. Like,
I will explain my reasoning after that, because
I mean,
make more sense once we go through our individual
picks. True. I got you. Like, the whole big thing we talked about it when it happened, the Jets picking up Rodgers makes it so much more difficult to kind of nail down the division picks, because like before you could throw the Jets in as two automatic wins. Now it's not going to be the case anymore. I'll stick with the 9-10 as a ceiling for me.
Interesting. Yeah, 9-10 is 9-10 is the barometer right now, for sure, at the very least, I think. To start week one, they don't go to Philly. Philly comes to New England to start their revenge tour. I think the Patriots are the first victim and will lose in week one.
I think so, too. I think the only chance you got is that the Eagles might be feeling themselves a little too much coming off a Super Bowl and the NFC Championship, obviously, win. Or the NFC, top team. Maybe they slip up a little bit. Maybe they get caught up in the whole Brady stuff, which we'll talk a little bit about at the end of the schedule stuff. That was kind of the last Patriot thought. But I'm with you. Philly's the more talented team. Maybe the Matt Patricia revenge game. Not the case. But again, talent wins out here. I think the Eagles take this one. So the Pats, for us, both start off 0-1.
Yeah, unfortunately. But luckily, the winlessness does not continue.
Mm-hmm.
8-20 game at Miami, not at Miami, with Miami coming to New England. I've done that twice in a row. Miami doesn't scare me, but like they are a threat to, you know, potentially take both games against the Patriots this year. I think that could happen, but I don't think it happens in New England. I'm going with a W here.
Yeah, I am too. I'm glad the Patriots seems like finally get the Dolphins early in the season in Gillette instead of down to Miami for a change. Yes. That's nice to see. And, you know, there's going to be questions with Tua going into it. Of course, you know, health and everything. You know, can he bounce back from last season? Ton of talent on that Dolphins team. I thought about the Patriots dropping two to Miami, but I can't have them starting off on a big losing streak to maybe spoil a little bit to start the season. I have them finding a way to win this first Sunday night primetime matchup for the Patriots.
Yeah, I think they will when it all comes down to it. I just want to check something. Okay, I noticed one of the matchups is actually on the road that we have listed here.
Oh, is it?
Fix that real quick, because the game is on my birthday, so I had known that prior, but I wanted to double check. Speaking of games on the road, their first one will be traveling to the Jets. Play Aaron Rodgers and the Jets for the first time. Spoiler, I guess, you know, as you're talking about it, I have them splitting with the Jets, and this comes with the L first.
As do I. It'll be a home-and-home split, easiest way to put it. Aaron Rodgers, you know, he's still filling out process with the new Aaron Rodgers-led Jets. I think the Patriots, it's going to be a close game, I think. I don't think, you know, they'll get blown off the field or anything. Like I said, a filling out type of game, but I have them losing as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's even with Rodgers, I think the Jets games are going to be a toss-up. Patriots are the Patriots with Bill Belichick, and the Jets are still at this point unproven with no games under their belt with Aaron Rodgers. Could take them a little while.
Very true.
They traveled to Dallas week four. I have a W here. Dak Prescott didn't do really anything last year to make me more or less scared of him, maybe a little less. And Mike McCarthy is an idiot. I think the Patriots shock the Cowboys early in the season, go on the road and beat them in their own stadium.
That would be nice. But I don't see it happening. I have them losing this game. I think overall talent of the roster is going to win out in the end. You know, maybe you catch Dallas in early season slump a little bit. You get lucky. But yeah, in the end, Dallas is the more talented team on paper. I think they've found a way to pull this game out, even with big dummy Mike McCarthy. So the Pats for me are starting off the year 1-3. Like I said, I couldn't have them going 0-4. So I had to sneak that Dolphins team in, that Dolphins win in rather, in week two.
Reasonable.
If there is, real quick, though, if there is a game for them to steal on the schedule this year, I 100% agree with you. It'll be the Dallas game because, you know, Dallas has just shown before that they can lose to average, mediocre teams. So very well could see that happening.
Yeah, I mean, there's one more game I think they can steal in particular down the road, but we'll get to that later.
Okay.
I feel like most Pats fans probably think they'll win this game, and that is against the Saints at home. Mm-hmm. Last year when I was at the game in week three, they did not. This year, they get their revenge and beat the Saints at Gillette. I think Derek Carr makes that team a little better than they were last year, but not enough to beat the Patriots here. You know, especially if they start off 1-3, like in your scenario, they're going to be playing desperate. Even in a 2-2 scenario, there'll be something, you know, extra to play for, a little fuel to the fire. I think the Patriots definitely win this game.
I do too. You gifted Derek Carr a win last year with a better team. Now he's going to a worse situation, a team that looks like they're in a semi-rebuild. And the game at home obviously helps as well. I think the Patriots win this game pretty easily.
Yeah, I'd hope so.
This is a loss. Like, then you're going to be obviously depending on what happened the four previous weeks. But if you lose to the Saints, this is going to be oh crap, this might not be a good year type of feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. Then they go to Vegas to face old friend Josh McDaniels. Look, that Vegas game last year was tough. This time they get their revenge. you know, you're in Las Vegas, but you gotta wonder. It's a little weird to see, you know, Devontae Adams' comments today. You wonder if, you know, maybe things don't get off on the right foot for the Raiders this year. They're Patriots West. I think the Patriots win this game. I think, you know, Belichick is a smarter coach than McDaniels, and we'll prove it here.
Mm-hmm. I do too. Yep, I got to win. Who knows if Jimmy's even going to play in this game. Like, it is week six, getting close to the time where maybe he starts to break down a little bit. So maybe they won't have Garoppolo. He luck out there. But yeah, you said it. They should have won last year. I think they're going to be perfectly fine. They'll win this year.
Yeah, I agree.
What did Devontae Adams say today? I didn't see.
He was talking about, well, what did he say? I don't have the exact quote.
Did he make some sort of like, I don't know, I'm just assuming like something, I don't know, something to do with Rodgers' comment, or like wanting to play with.
He said yesterday, we don't see eye to eye on what we think is best for us right now. I'm going to have to buy into this, try to be optimistic as possible. It's not what I expected to happen, but it's something that's the reality now. So
give it time,
Devontae Adams, you are a New England Patriot, hopefully.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. Buffalo next. Afternoon game at home. I still don't think the Patriots are on Buffalo's level. This is an L for me. You know, Buffalo did take one big hit on their defense that I'm interested to see how they rebound from, in particular, which is Tremaine Edmonds going to the Chicago Bears and cashing out. But they're just still the better team. They still have Josh Allen. I don't think they're winning any games against Buffalo. Spoiler alert this year.
Nope. The division still runs for the Buffalo Bills. I don't care what move the Jets made. I don't care what move Miami made. The division is still rightfully Josh Allen's on the Bills until somebody proves me wrong.
Yeah, I agree. They go out Miami for a little preamble to Halloween, if you will. And it's ironic because Miami at times has been scary for the Patriots. I think they lose this one. I think they split with Miami this year and it comes on the road.
As do I. All the same reasons.
Yep. The Washington Commanders, I think this is another probably consensus victory for most people. Yep. The Commanders are, you know, rebuilding on the fly. Got some uncertainty with Montez Sweat, potentially more likely Chase Young down the road. So it's a team in a little bit of limbo. I think the Patriots are just a lot better and we'll win this one. We have no idea if Sam Howell is going to be anywhere near competent or the QB at this point in the season.
I was just going to say the same thing. You have no idea what that situation is going to look like 9 weeks into the season. So that's probably the easiest win on the schedule for the Patriots if I had to pick one. So again, like if that's a game they struggle in or drop, then I think you might have some eye-opening problems, but I don't see. I can't see them losing to Washington. Like you said, they're clearly rebuilt. You know, they have some good pieces. You know, I love Terry McLaurin, but too many questions for that team. They are good. Yes. They good so that is a huge positive for that franchise. Yep.
Maybe they'll play for something. But yeah, maybe if Sam Howell isn't QB, we'll see Jacoby Brissett.
That's right. I forgot he went out there.
I think Jacoby Brissett and Jake Fromm. So I'm not expecting Jake Fromm.
No.
Indianapolis, another one I hope people are seeing as a consensus win.
The Germany game.
This one will be in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going with a W. 6-4 at this point in the season for me. At 9:30 in the morning, nice little morning football, some morning beverages, and a nice full day of drinking for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Leading into the bye week with a nice win.
Yeah, I think Anthony Richardson's going to be good there, but it's a rookie quarterback against Bill Belichick in Germany. Like, all the things stack up for a Patriots win there. Like, there's just too much going on for the Colts. Like, there's still some questions with that team. I think that's probably the second or third easiest win on the schedule. You know, again, depending on how you look at it, like, that's a game the Patriots should win unless, you know, Jonathan Taylor is healthy and he runs all over them again.
Or if Josh Downs and Anthony Richardson deliver on that bond they've been talking about.
That too.
After the bye week, they have the Giants on the road. I might be going to this game for my birthday with some friends. It is directly on my birthday. So please win. I am picking the Patriots to win because it is my birthday and they will win out of respect. And I think the Giants, while good and surprises last year, are still a beatable team.
Yeah, I'm not sold on Daniel Jones. I don't care how he did last year. I don't care what he makes for money now. I think he's the most overpaid quarterback in the league. might be crazy to say, but he just doesn't do it for me. I think, again, like, the only thing that would worry me about that is if Brian Daboll comes up with some sort of just ridiculous game plan for the Patriots. I have it as a win as well.
Yeah, fair. The Chargers, December 3rd in New England in the afternoon. I'm reluctantly putting an L here because of Justin Herbert. They had Quentin Johnston. Who knows if Austin Ekeler will be on the team at this point? That's a big contingency.
Oh, that's true too. Yep, good point.
Don't know what's going to happen there. But I don't know. I think this one's going to be close and the Chargers just pull it out. I don't know. I feel like I'm going to be wrong here. Belichick will find a way to outcoach Staley and pull it off. But the Chargers, their offense still is potent. Mm-hmm. And I think that could cause problems. Maybe J.C. Jackson will finally deliver on his revenge game. Mm-hmm. I doubt it. He sucks now.
Yeah, talk about getting the bag and then just kind of calling it.
Yeah. A nice win here would be good, too, because after this, they have a short week.
Yeah, you'd like to. I mean, I have them winning for the reason you mentioned. I think Bill Belichick will coach circles around Brandon Staley. I like the Chargers. I like Justin Herbert. I think, as people I've talked to before that have talked to me about it, know that, like, I think he is the main reason why that team is not succeeding. If they get rid of Staley and bring anybody else in, I think they'll be better off. I completely forgot about the Ekeler situation. It is kind of funny that those trade rumors and that trade request kind of just died down and tapered out without. Yeah, that's true. Again, forgot about it. The only thing you remember about the Derrick Henry one was the fake, Eagles trade that was posted on Twitter?
Oh, yeah.
Or wherever. Yeah, that was the only thing you heard about that. But yeah, I'm with you. I mean, the Chargers definitely the better all-around team. But the big thing for me, too, that game in Gillette, I think that obviously helps the Patriots out a ton. And again, I just think Brandon Staley is an absolute just moron of a head coach. So I think that's one he'll chalk up a win for Bill.
Also, is Justin Herbert Bill for the cold weather?
That's true too. Yeah, you don't know that.
Could be a snow game.
Ooh, that would be interesting.
Could be a snow game. I think one that could absolutely be a snow game is their next game as well in Pittsburgh.
I would much rather a snow game against the Steelers, like classic Patriots Steelers, more so than the Chargers Patriots.
This one slightly worries me, and I don't know why exactly. But in Pittsburgh. Something about the Steelers in Pittsburgh in the winter. You know, maybe Kenny Pickett rounds into form. Maybe this is a little bit of a trap game, but I'm going with I can't pick them against the Patriots at this point in time. So
I can't either.
To move to 8-5.
I can't either, but just to add into that more worrisome thing, like, this is probably right in that stretch too, where like Mike Tomlin's on the cusp of having his first losing season, and then the Steelers go on a stupid miraculous win streak that gets them either right to 500 or right over it. Like, it seems to happen every year for this guy. So that's something that could scare you as well. But I'm with you. Like, I trust, maybe it's crazy to say, I trust if he's even the quarterback at this time, Mac Jones, in this situation more than I trust Kenny Pickett. Like, he didn't really impress me all that much last year anyway.
Yeah, he's got some work to do, but
absolutely
still an interesting QB prospect for sure. This one is probably a consensus loss, like the first Buffalo game.
Mm-hmm.
First Kansas City, not having to go on the road is nice. But, you know, when they have a short week, at one point they have a long break here in between games, 11 days. Yep. So that could be helpful to game plan for potentially their toughest game of the season. I'm against the Chiefs, prime time, Monday Night Football. I don't like their odds, even at home. Kansas City coming off, you know, the Super Bowl. Got to show them their respect. Can't pick an upset here. Just can't do it in good conscience.
Just don't get killed on Monday night. Yeah. That's all I'm asking. Just don't lose the game like 48-6 or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
That would make it worth watching. Like, if you lose in a heartbreaker, that would suck too. But like, keep it close. Don't let them run all over you, especially in Gillette.
Yeah, I agree. This one might be a slam dunk to some, but with Sean Payton, I can't say for sure. But I do still have the Patriots beating Denver in New England. Another primetime game, Sunday Night Football. Back-to-back primetime for the Patriots. This one will be on Christmas Eve. It would be pretty rude of the Patriots to ruin Christmas.
That would suck, yep.
I'm going with the W here to move to 9-6 in crunch time late in the season.
I am too. Again, like you said, the Payton factor does make it interesting, but maybe that fixes Russell Wilson. There's still plenty of question marks around him. And again, I've kind of beat a dead horse here, but the game being in Gillette, I think, helps the Patriots there. If that game was in Denver, I think it'd be much tougher. You probably see the Patriots have a little bit more problems, but with you know, there's questions with both these teams going in. And again, week 16 with these wicked early predictions, you don't know how the season's going to go, but I'm with you. I think that this is the one the Patriots might be able to squeak out.
Yep. And if it were in Denver, we'd hear on sports radio all week, oh, Mass, Mac Jones can't deal with altitude, Mass.
Yeah, it's, yeah. Mike, he's not going to be able to breathe.
What is he going to do with the increase in elevation, Mike?
Yeah.
They're going to lose this freaking game, Mike.
Yeah, yep.
Speaking of games they're going to lose, I do think they're going to against the Buffalo Bills. New Year's Eve, I don't think they'll have their New Year's resolutions come true here early mm-hmm. on.
Would you rather them ruin Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve? Which one? If they had to ruin
New
one.
New Year's Eve. New Year's
I'm
Eve.
I'm with you.
Even
yep.
though it's later in the season, crunch time. Yeah. Don't ruin Christmas. Christmas is too good to be ruined.
The opponent goes into it too, I guess. Like, don't lose to Denver. That would just doubly ruin Christmas God. Eve. Like, if you lose to Buffalo on New Year's Eve, it's expected. So,
especially if Russell Wilson, you know, still sucks and pulls out like a stinker victory. You know, if he runs back into form and beats you, it's a different story. But
exactly. Yep.
Either way, it would still suck, you know, at this point. They're on like fringe playoff territory. So a win would be ideal.
Mm-hmm.
Week 18 is currently to be determined. Jets at home. This is where they get their win. Crunch time. Bill Belichick versus Robert Saleh. I just don't see the Jets winning this game. Desperation sets in. Wanting to get back to the playoffs is a huge thing for this organization and the fan base. I just don't see a scenario they lose this game. And they
maybe this is a game that determines a playoff spot too, which would be interesting mm-hmm. to see. And we know the kind of choke artist that Aaron Rodgers, like it'd be awesome to see. Like the Jets need this win, going to Gillette, try to beat the Patriots to get into the playoffs. And Aaron Rodgers in his first season there, the guy that's supposed to bring him back to the playoffs and make the Jets relevant again. It'd be so funny if he loses this game and the Jets, like even if the Patriots don't make the playoffs, like this is a game that means nothing to them. If they spoil the Jets' chance to go to the playoffs, which very well could be on the table, like Bill Belichick's definitely going to want that. The Patriots are definitely going to want it, especially if they lose earlier in the year in New York or in, where the hell did the Jets play? Why am I blanking here? In, wherever the stadium is. Yeah. Thank you. If they lose the Jets early in the season, this is going to be definitely a revenge game for the mm-hmm. whole team. And to knock out Aaron Rodgers potentially would be so, so sweet.
And potentially his only year with the Jets.
That too. It's still questions about that.
So ways they can get to 12-5 in that ceiling. My scenario has them losing to the Chargers. I think that game is winnable. Mm-hmm. I think the game on the road of Miami is absolutely winnable. This would, of course, be contingent on potentially needing to beat Dallas as well. That's not by any means a slam dunk. And I think both Jets games are honestly winnable. So I think, you know, in that scenario, realistically, you say 13 or 14 wins, but let's be real here.
Exactly. You're going all out. Patriots are back, baby. Let's go.
14-3. No, but I really do think 12 is within reach, but I'm looking between like 8 to 11 wins here.
The more I think about it,
if they have less than 8 wins, I mean, I'll be
absolutely. Yeah, that's
sure.
That
it's
would be
possible. You know, maybe they're not quite there yet. But they do I'm really surprised.
They do have, I think they're tied for the third hardest strength of schedule I saw the other day. So that might be something to think about. Yeah. But I don't know. Again, it's the NFL. Crazy things happen. You know, you could maybe catch a team sleeping. If I had to give them an extra win, I don't know if I want to, you know, it's coming out of the NFC East,
Dallas,
I think.
Dallas.
No, I see
come
your Dallas.
The dark side.
I'll see your Dallas and I'll raise your Philadelphia. I think for the thing we're going to talk about in a second, but you know, Brady going to be in the building for that one. Probably. Maybe you
Brady
catch the
suit up a QB.
No, guys get juiced up for that. Maybe, you know, they want to put on a show for their old quarterback. Maybe the Eagles get a little starstruck or, you know, come in and like I said, thinking, you know, we're the top dogs of this league. Cause we made it to the Super Bowl last year and they have a little bit of a Super Bowl hangover to start the season. That's the only way I see him beating that Philadelphia team. Other than that, like they could very well get crucified in that game. But if I had to give him a win, an extra one, like I said, the Dallas one's interesting because again, it is the Cowboys. They do tend to, you know, crap all over themselves at times. But I'm gonna go bold and go with the Philly game for all the extra stuff going on for that one.
I like it. It's bold. Speaking of Philly, let's do a bonus. Do you have a game you're looking forward to most on the NFL schedule? Because mine is Eagles and 49ers. With all
the rematch of
the NFC Championship game.
Mm-hmm.
49ers supposedly not having a full roster with Brock Purdy and being a little shorthanded. It's going to be some bad blood in that game.
Yeah,
shootout. That's number one for me.
I probably would have picked that one just for all the intangibles, like you said, to go different. When are the I've got to think now. I'm assuming the Chiefs and Bengals are meeting up at some point, right?
Yes.
That's probably, yeah, I'll go with that one. And those games are always pretty good. You know, you get the two best quarterbacks in the AFC. Maybe you could argue the two best quarterbacks in the NFL if you really want to go into a deep dive about it, but we're not going to do that. But that's mine. Like, you got to think those two teams would be there at the very end as well.
Week so, 17.
Ooh, that could be a number one seed potentially determiner. That's even better then.
Oh, boy.
I'll go with
Give
that
me
one.
The football season, damn it. I Absolutely, want summer yeah. to be over. Get me to football season.
Yep.
To wrap it up tonight, the Patriots will be honoring Tom Brady, as we clue that in the week one home opener. An interesting, maybe some people didn't expect. I didn't, you know, expect to see this, but it makes sense, I guess. The beginning of many celebrations to see Tom Brady. The first, if you want to say celebration, was the retirement home video where we saw Tom Brady make a cameo at the end.
Oh, does that count? Okay, so maybe
he was actually there.
No, I saw the behind the scenes video. They had some guy that was listed as the Tom Brady stand-in. So
yeah, it's nice to see real Tom Brady in the building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but a lot of celebrations for the GOAT. So
how do you feel about the multiple? So that's like my main takeaway from this. Like, I don't have a problem with them honoring Tom Brady. That I think if you did, you'd just get a life. Like, you need to not be so upset about that. The multiple celebrations kind of, I don't want to say rubs me the wrong way, but it kind of irks me. Like, I feel like maybe it's like a played out type of thing just to keep people invested in the Patriots. Like, hey, Brady's coming back to home opener. Hey, Brady's coming back it wouldn't be 10 because they're in Germany. Week 13 against the Charger. Like, I feel like if it's like, I don't know. I'm assuming the home opener, you're probably going to either announce that his number's getting retired or it's going to be the number retirement that night. How much further do you go from there? Like, I've
second celebration.
That's what I'm thinking. Maybe they space it out a little bit, but like, I don't know. I feel like you could knock out these things kind of in one or two nights instead. And maybe again, like, I'm just reading too much into the multiple celebrations thing. And Robert Kraft meant like you said, he's there opening night. He's there later on down the line for the actual number retirement. But your thoughts on that, if you had anything that you wanted.
No, nothing. It doesn't really bug me that much, but I'm excited to see him back in the building. It's going to be
absolutely
crazy.
It's going to be good. Yep.
Yep. Can't really complain too much. But that is going to wrap it up unless you have any final thoughts for tonight's show.
No, the only other question I was going to ask you, because we got a couple minutes to kill before the Celtics start. You mentioned the Patriots schedule release video. Any other ones that stood out to you? I mean, the one that caught the most fire was the Tennessee Titans one for having a bunch of clueless people try to name off who they're playing during the season, which I thought was excellent. We even saw some teams kind of poke fun at it and change their Twitter handles to those team names. So that one was great. But anything else that you saw that maybe stood out to you?
I didn't watch any.
No, really? Oh, that's lame. So could have lied, just been like, I like the Patriots one for all the players and just made it kind of, I don't know. You didn't see the Titans one?
No.
You have to go watch it. It's very funny.
Okay, there's my homework.
There you go. For next show, get back to me and tell me what you thought. Go watch all 32 teams and tell me what you thought of all of them.
God damn it.
Yep.
Hate homework. That's going to wrap it up for tonight. Tip-off is coming soon for game one, so hopefully they'll be on the winning side.
It's more likely 8:40. Like, we got plenty of time. True, it's a playoff basketball game. We could stay until this till 9, but we're not going to.
Yeah, well, we'll see when it gets started. But thank you so much for listening. You can find us wherever you find your podcasts. Find us on Twitch and YouTube as well. Follow the Full Press coverage page. Turn on notifications on both of those if you like. You can rate and review on Spotify and Apple. You can find us on Twitter at @Mike_Crady, @Ryan_Savaggio, and the show at @SalAndCradyPod. Find us on TikTok and see our stuff whenever we decide to post. And thank you for listening. Really appreciate it. Stay safe, stay healthy, be nice to people. Go Celtics, and we'll talk to you next week. Peace out.